Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 7 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater, program one. Oops, no. Program 216 in the series,
Lisa.
See how
time flies, Carl.
I know. 216 shows. This is September 17th, 2017. And to my right, the vivacious and effervescent Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
What's up, Carl?
And look who's in the engineering
studio
chair here. Mike Castella, our executive producer. What's up, Mike?
I'm doing well. Here I am.
Yes, good to see you. And Shante Garth, our producer in the booth. And we'll be here till 2 o'clock in the morning with all your favorite classic radio shows, including Broadway Is My Beat, starring Larry Thor, Good Detective Adventure. Then it's sort of a double Gildersleeve fest, because we have The Great Gildersleeve, starring Hal Perry from 1942. And then Hal Perry stars in a radio adaptation of his film, Gildersleeve's Bad Day, on the Screen Guild Theater. And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Dum, 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 dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actress stars in the upcoming drama Wonderstruck, as the story of a young boy is told simultaneously with a tale about a young girl in New York from 50 years ago.
Okay. What do they win?
They're going to win a $25 gift card for a Lumel Nadi's Pizza.
Wow, I know that's your favorite pizza,
it sure
huh, Lisa?
Is.
All right, the number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actress played Amber Waves in Boogie Nights.
Let me tell you something, Tom. Let me tell you something that you don't know. I know a lawyer. You understand? You might think I don't, but I do, and I'll take you to court.
I know a lawyer, too. His
do
name
you?
Is Dan Wolf.
Well, he must
He's
be the only lawyer
you.
In Chicago.
All right. So if you know who that actress is, give us a call, 312-981-7200. And win a Lou Malnati's pizza. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to show 2.
That was not on helium, by the way. That was just regular air.
Oh, good. Okay, so this is show 216. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. We're going to play it one more time.
Let me tell you something, Tom. Let me tell you something that you don't know. I know a lawyer. You understand? You might think I don't, but I do, and I'll take you to court.
There you go. Hey, Bob.
Hey.
How are you?
How are you?
Great, great. So who is that actress? I love her.
Julianne Moore.
Julianne Moore is exactly right, and we're thrilled to give you a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's very best deep dish pizza. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. Thank you so much, and enjoy a great pizza and enjoy a great show tonight.
Yeah, I have a quick question.
Sure.
Carl.
Yes.
How many of those old-time radio shows were actually saved? What percentage do you think? I mean, were a lot of them lost?
Yeah, most of them were lost. I mean, there's about 100,000 shows that I know of that have existed that exist. But you know, there were hundreds and hundreds of thousands that were broadcast in the 3 or 4 decades of the golden age of radio. But still, 100,000 shows is pretty darn good. So there you go. Sure thing, Bob. Thanks for listening. All right, Lisa, it is time for our first classic radio show. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about our contest, 1977 song contest.
Okay, so we have a 77 song contest. It's already started, and Carl's song has been guessed.
What?
Yep.
They guessed my song
they
already?
They sure did. And maybe you're just an open book, but
I
we still have song choices for me and for Roger. And all you have to do is text in what you think our favorite song from 1977 is. And you text it into 312-981-7200. I am watching the text in line. If I don't respond, it just means that you didn't get it right. And if you do get it right, don't you worry. I will reply right back to you.
All right.
And we'll have a little fun with that between the radio shows.
So don't bother guessing my song, because somebody already got it. Okay, it's time for Broadway Is My Beat. This was a detective series that came to radio in 1949, lasting until 1954. Anthony Ross and then Larry Thor starred as Times Square detective Danny Clover. And the series opened to the theme, I'll Take Manhattan. Clover worked homicide from Times Square to Columbus Circle, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. And he was supported by Charles Calvert. He played Sergeant Gino Tartaglia. And Jack Crucian was Sergeant Mugovan. This was a really, really cool series. You really felt like you were in New York on Times Square as you listened to this broadcast. Let's go back to June 23rd, 1952. This is called the Ruth Larson Case. It stars Larry Thor. Here's part one of Broadway Is My Beat.
Broadway's My Beat, from Times Square to Columbus Circle, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world.
Broadway's My Beat, with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover.
The nighttime starts at the river before it closes over Broadway. A wind drifts in with the moistened shadows, flings them into the street, flattens them against the gutter, picks a man waiting for a bus and wraps darkness around him. And a light comes on, and another. And down the street, there where the crowd has gathered against the traffic signal, high above them a neon sputters, flames. The spectaculars dance. Somebody runs into the street and yells, "Come on!" And everybody does. Night has come to Broadway. Where I was, there was a wind. The built-in wind, a thing composed of poor ventilation, tears, shed and unshed, and bottled chemicals. It was the basic ingredient of the city morgue, though not to be found on blueprints or bills of specifications. It was something new to the man walking beside me.
This place? This place?
Just take it easy, Mr. Larson.
I'll tell you something. I guess it'll sound funny. I've read about places like this, and I've close my mind to what I read. I guess I never wanted to visualize anything.
Right here, Mr. Larson. What was your daughter wearing?
Mrs. Larson wrote it down for me. You see, I wasn't home when our daughter, when Ruth went to the movies, so Mrs. Larson... Ruth was wearing a skirt and blouse, pink bobby socks and saddle shoes. I guess you want to know this, too. She was 5'1". She was 14 in May. She had brown hair and brown eyes. And I want you to know, Mr. Clover, I guess all fathers feel the same way. My Ruth was... Well, our friend said she was a remarkable child. She's going... We're going to send her to... Under that sheet.
This girl was found in a vacant lot between your home and the theater your wife mentioned when she called.
How... I mean... Look, you know what
Beaten, fractured skull.
I have to look, don't I?
Yes. If it's your daughter.
Ruth's a nice girl. She started to go to parties with boys, and she always gets home by 11 o'clock. She's going to be a dancer. When people come to the house, she dances for them.
Mr. Larson.
You see, as I told you before, Ruth. Ruthie. Oh, Ruthie. Who did it? What monster? Who did it to you? Who? Who?
The fury took over. The man, trembling with it, shivering with it, scurried from wall to wall, enraged at the wound the death of his child had clawed across his heart, torn inside his throat. The helpless, futile rage of the animal whose small range of understanding has been kicked, beaten, thrown against the barbed wall of violence. Not once more did he look at his child. Now try only to wipe out the memory, try to strangle the long-ago laughter and sobs that the child had let echo through him. And finally, the collapse, the heap on the concrete floor. An You call quietly to the officer on duty to help you lift the man, carry him to a place where he can sleep away the fury of his dead. Then back to your office and close the door on it. Stand at the window, watching the squalls of the nighttime wash against it, beat against it, and then stare at the walls. Then hear the door open for it, to let it all in again.
Danny? Danny?
What do you want?
Well, Dr. Sinsky's report. He was busy on another. He asked me to bring it to you, so...
Leave it on my desk.
All right. You're not going to look at it, Danny?
Why? I know what's in it.
Well, I thought I did, too, till I glanced it over on the way to your office. You better take a look at it.
You're so eager, I don't want to spoil it for you. Tell me about it, Mugovan.
Danny.
You tell me, huh, Mugovan?
We've had other kids who...
And this one's no different. That all, Mugovan?
That's what I've been trying to tell you. This one is different. Just what you saw when you first found her. That's what's in the report. Beaten, skull fractured with the butt of a gun. Nothing else.
Then give me a motive. Give me another motive why a 14-year-old child should... Clover speaking.
Sergeant Tartaglia at this end. Homicide, Danny. Woman in backyard of house at 1845 West 11. People named Murray. Upstairs wants you on it. Shall I tell him you're agreeable, Danny?
Tell him I'm... Bring me a motive, Mugovan. Upstairs wants me to run an errand.
She's over here, Mr. Clover. Right here.
Dead. Beaten. I'd say her skull had been fractured, Mr. Murray.
Oh, I don't understand it. I just don't understand it.
Tell me what happened.
We were sitting in the library. A knock came on the back door. I wanted to answer it, but Beatrice said I looked so comfortable.
There was just you two in the library. You and your wife.
And Sis.
Sis?
My sister Claudia. She can't hear anything. She's deaf. She never goes out of the house. I take care of her.
Well, who's in the house with her now? Who's playing that organ?
Oh, Sis plays.
I see. Go ahead.
Well, there was this knock on the door, and Beatrice went to the door, and I heard her talking to someone. At least, I think I did. I want you to know I'm not sure about that. I kept reading, that's all, and Sis was practicing.
Didn't your wife scream? Didn't you hear any...
No, I didn't. I happened to look up from my book a little later... After she went to the back door.
How much later?
Well, I don't know. I looked up and she still wasn't there. She
hadn't come back yet from answering that knock on the door.
That's right. So I went out back. The back door was still open, but there wasn't anybody there. I called to her. And then I started toward the alley and I stumbled. I stumbled over Beatrice lying...
Then what did you do?
Well, I called the police, and then I told Sis what had happened.
You speak sign language?
Yes, I learned it when I was very young so that I could speak with Sis. She's been with me all the time.
Huh. How long have you been married?
14 years. Why, what's that got to do?
Happily.
Of course, happily.
You have any children?
No, that's something Beatrice and I agreed on. Sis needs taking care of, and Beatrice is always so busy.
Busy? Busy doing what?
Clubs and auxiliaries, you know. She was well-liked, got things done. She was admired and well-liked.
Then who'd want to kill her?
Nobody would want to kill Beatrice. Nobody.
Mr. Murray.
She was a middle-aged woman, Mr. Clover. Everybody she knew was her friend. She did charity work. People came with troubles. Anybody, she'd help them. Why would anybody want to kill her? What motive would he have? What motive, Mr. Clover?
It was there again. What motive? A 14-year-old girl, the loved child of a quiet, nameless family, until a killer had taken the butt end of a gun, beaten their name and their dead child's name into the newspapers that choked the trash bin supplied for the purpose by the Department of Sanitation. What motive for that? And for Mrs. Beatrice Murray, admired, liked, charitable, a woman to whom the trouble came, a childless woman who sat in the evening and sewed together the patchwork of her day while her husband read and his sister released the music she couldn't hear. What motive for that brutal death? Because you find no answer, share it with Dr. Sinsky. Ask the question of him, burden the gentle doctor with it.
You put me a question, Danny, that is not strictly in my department or in my education.
Mind if I bum another cigarette?
Oh, here. Help yourself.
Thanks. You've been with us a long time, Doctor. Some of it must have rubbed off.
Danny, I deal only in known quantities. You boys bring me the wounds you find, I wash them, bandage them. You bring me the dead, I perform autopsies. Known quantities, Danny. Like I know my name, your name, that this Mrs. Murray was murdered by the butt of the same gun that hammered away the life of the child Ruth.
Why? Tell me why. I'll go out and buy my own pack of cigarettes.
If I had gold, you could have it, Danny. No strings to it. No. For the question you ask, go consult a specialist. A man who puts the microscope of his training to the emotions.
The department psychiatrist?
Yes, to him. Perhaps he will agree with me, and I'm only an amateur, a dabbler, mind you, Danny, that this violence, this ugly bestial violence, has been committed by what is called a paranoid.
I've read about them. Had them screaming in my office. They dream up hates against themselves.
For this they kill an animal, a child, a woman. Excuse me, Danny. Come in, please.
Looking for me, Gino?
Yeah, Danny. Fresh homicide. Alley on West 10th. Buckman's got a squad car.
Let me finish my cigarette, Tartaglia.
Well, sure, Danny. Well, sure, if you want.
It's finished.
A woman, Danny.
Yeah. Put your flash on her. Hold it. Hold it right there. Where's that music coming from?
An apartment upstairs. Danny? The back of her head, it's...
Uh-huh. Keep your flash still.
We've seen it 2 times already. In a short space. This makes 3.
It made 3. The woman staring into the beam of the flashlight Mugman held close to her face, staring in the final disbelief that this had happened to her in this place, in this time. She lay in awkwardness, her dress disarranged, her hand where it had frozen trying to straighten the wisp of blood-clotted hair under her black straw hat. The alley wind found the white lace at her throat, riffled it, and the murdered woman made 3.
You're listening to Broadway's My Beat, written by Morton Fine and David Friedkin, with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover.
All right, that is the first portion of Broadway is My Beat with the Ruth Larson case from June 23rd, 1952. They mentioned Morton Fine and David Friedkin. They were a writing partner, a writing team, and they did a lot of radio shows, including, Lisa, The Mysterious Traveler. That was one of the shows. The Sealed Book was another one they did. And Crime Classics, they worked on that for a while. So, yeah, they did a lot of radio programming and writing. And they worked for The Shadow was another one they did, scripts for The Shadow. So I hope you're enjoying Broadway is My Beat. Now, someone also guessed Lisa's song. So they've guessed my song and Lisa's song. I tell you, these listeners are good. They're very good at guessing.
You know, I had someone text in and said it's actually hard to believe that someone right off the bat would guess your song so quickly and mine. How do they do it? There's 100 top songs. It's like a needle in a haystack, a shot in the dark. And that's true. We do have a lot of listeners and we have a lot of people texting in. We give no clues whatsoever. Yeah. Our only clue is just knowing our past song choices and just knowing our personalities and just giving it a shot in the dark. And it's just that random.
You know, you got to remember, folks, that this show broadcasts all across the country. It's in 40 states plus parts of Canada. We have hundreds of thousands of listeners, and they sort of know our personalities, and they look at the songs and go, well, that sounds like a Lisa song or whatever. But we do have a winner for Lisa and for me, not Roger yet. So you can continue to text in 312-981-7200 for Roger's favorite song of 1977. But first, these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, this is the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. Lisa Wolf to my right. We're here every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. playing your favorite classic radio shows, talking about the shows, having a little fun, and playing contests every once in a while. And in fact, we're in the midst of our 1977 song contest, and someone has guessed my song and Lisa's song. Has anyone guessed Roger's songs yet?
No, they have not.
Okay. So you can still try to guess Roger's song.
It's okay because I forgot what my song was.
Well, I'll remind you, just not right now.
The number to text in, 312-981-7200. After we listen to the conclusion to Broadway Is My Beat, we'll play my song and Lisa's song. And but continue to guess for Roger's song, 312-981-7200. But right now, here's the conclusion to Broadway Is My Beat.
The night music of summer spills into Broadway from the scarred throats of the loudspeakers hanging over the record shops. And this summer's kids, in the off-the-shoulder cottons and the transparent California sport shirts, squeeze each other into the doorways and lap it up. And then someone shrills a new diversion in a new shop window on a new corner, and Broadway's youth rebops on down to it. It's an old ceremony on Broadway, this dancing in the streets. And the sweating barker with a fistful of passes to happy upstairs lands. Just the price of the amusement tax, kid. That's old, too. The girl in the swimsuit lying on the billboard beach, never aging, but old. And the touch of summer's night on your eyelids, that's familiar, too. It's all happened to you before. And where I was, where Mugovan was, it had happened before, too. To a 14-year-old girl named Ruth, to Mrs. Beatrice Murray, and now to the woman lying dead in an alley, not feeling the touch of the man who at first timidly and then with effort twisted the purse out of her hand.
She was holding on to it so tight, Danny.
Open it.
So tight. Yeah. Killed the same way as the other two, wouldn't you say, Danny?
Uh-huh.
Maybe our fair city's being honored with a mad killer, huh?
Maybe.
Sick man with a grudge against women, even if they're a kid.
Looks like it. How long does it take to go through the purse, Mugovan?
Just sorting the unnecessary stuff, Danny. Tissues, compact, change purse, bobby pins. There's a sale slip for... Let's see. Hold a flash a minute, Danny.
Yeah.
For chinaware. A tortoiseshell comb with silver edging.
That's all? No identification?
Well, I haven't tried this inside flap yet, Danny. Yeah, here it is. New Social Security card made out to, hold it again.
Mm.
Alma Russell, 4212 6th Avenue. That's around 8th Street, Danny.
Well, maybe she was on her way home, took this alley. It cuts through to 6th. Uh-huh. Killer knew she took it sometimes, waited for her here, slugged her, made sure she was dead.
Got a confession, Danny. It puzzles me.
You alone in the world?
The three of them dead. That girl, that woman with her husband, and the sister who plays the organ. No, this one. I could understand it if...
If what?
There wasn't a mark on him, Danny, other than the beating from the gun, but not a mark. And this girl's young.
About 25, I'd say.
Pretty. Neat. Clean. I bet she was attractive. Sweet.
What are you building, Mugman?
Well, we've had them before, Danny. The guys who wait in alleys, go to moving picture houses, talk to little girls, and the vacant lot. This kind we've had before. And in a way, I could understand it. But the killer who...
You said he was sick. Dr. Sinsky called him a paranoid.
Whatever they call him, it scares me he's sick. I got a niece lives 3 blocks from me with my brother. She's...
Funny. You're trying to talk about her like the girl's father did when... Go call them, Morton Mugovan.
Danny, the thought that it could happen...
Go call them. I'll wait for you. And in a little while, the young woman who had hugged death in an alley was attended to by gentle people, which is the miracle of violent death in a great city. The intern, the stranger in the white jacket, knelt beside her, shook his head, and thought a thought that included both of them. And an ambulance driver looked at her and bit his lip when he put her on the stretcher. Then the alley was no longer remarkable. It resolved back unto itself. Play of refuse, mewings, and the shortcut home. It was the end of something or another. For me, it was the end of the day. Home now in bed. Adjust the mind not to dream. This can be done by a policeman assigned to homicide. Sleep the night through and wake and have the coffee and read the paper and get to work. Go now to the address on 10th Street because a girl named Alma Russell once lived there. Ring the bell. Adjust your mind again to the fact that you're going to talk about the murder of a young woman at 8:30 in the morning.
You from the police?
Yes, I am.
Well, come in. In here. Your kitchen. Sit down.
Thanks.
What's your name?
Danny Clover.
Mine's Perdon. Ethel Perdon. I'm mine host to the boarders. Had your coffee yet, Danny?
Uh-huh.
Me too. You won't mind if I try making up this face of mine, do you? I say making up because that's the phrase that's used.
How is it that you're expecting the police, Mrs. Perdon?
Well, I read the morning papers, don't I? Alma got killed, didn't she? She lived here, didn't she? So, who should I expect? Humphrey Bogart? Yeah. How does the lipstick look, Danny? Kissable or otherwise? Otherwise, huh?
Look, Mrs. Perdon, I want you to tell me everything you can about Alma Russell.
Sure, sure. Can you reach that mascara, Danny?
Hmm?
Yeah, right there on the shelf, see? Thanks. About Alma? A maid. Cleans, sweeps, dusts. A buck an hour.
Who'd she work for?
Well, she never said. Quit a job a couple of weeks ago. I think she got another one just the other day. Well, I guess that's the best I can do with my facial equipment. Mirror, mirror on the wall.
What else about her?
Well, I don't know what else. She paid board, kept to herself, was no trouble, didn't talk, except a how do you do and a very well thank you. Nice table manners. Broke her bread and never left much crumbs. Nice girl.
What about boyfriends?
None here in my establishment. All ladies. What happens in the street, I wouldn't know. Help me with my coat, will you, Danny?
You going someplace?
Well, sure I am.
I want to look at Alma's room.
First landing, door on your right. You want to talk to me soon again, Danny?
Maybe. After I look at Alma's room.
I'll be easy to find. Your place. Your morgue. I'm going down and cry for Alma Russell. Somebody's got to cry for her.
Watch her leave for a session of weeping through mascaraed eyelashes. The pastime, the protest against her being bitter and lonely and unwanted. And then to the dead woman's room. Search it. Note its primness. Handle the modest belongings of a girl who had washed, dusted, arranged the belongings of other women in other, richer rooms. The pile of old magazines carefully saved on the closet shelf. And on the bedstand, the new ones. The fan magazines, the romances, truer than her own because they were printed on slick paper. The dresser, lined with a thin layer of inexpensive underclothes. The wardrobe with the bargain flowered prints. The starched maid's uniform, the cloth coat, and the moth-proof bag. And that was it, the sum of Alma Russell's life. And then back to headquarters and the concern of Sergeant Gino Tartaglia for your tiredness, for your paleness.
Danny, not that it is mine to meddle, but, well, you should exhibit yourself to the sunshine more. Loll on Far Rockaway on your day off.
Gino.
Bring cheeks of tan to your cheeks. Bear your pale feet to the vitamin-filled rays.
My pale feet bother you?
Nothing whatsoever about your personality bothers me, Danny. It's only that
I know, Gino. You'd feel better if I got sunburned.
Well, it is the fashion of the season.
There's a rumor murder is the fashion.
Yeah, this also. Three. The members of the opposite sex.
It would be so simple. If only somewhere I could find where their lives have been touched by one man, by one killer.
Danny, don't whip yourself. I put the boys working on it like you asked. They can't find it either. All they come up with is a reading on a sales slip.
Huh?
The sales slip you found in the purse of the deceased Alma Russell. It seems the girl bought a teapot from a place called Ivers, paid $200 for it. And this makes a mishmash, upsets your colleagues in the department.
$200 for a teapot bought by a girl who makes a buck an hour. Doesn't it upset you?
Something we can do for you, sir?
Yes, there is. I'm from the police.
Good. Are we interested in some chinaware today?
Yes, we are. I want you to take a look at this. This is a sales slip.
What is it?
It's for a teapot, one that cost $200.
I don't understand why we're lifting our eyebrows, sir. Of course it did. A Staffordshire teapot on the current market is worth at least that.
This sales slip was found on a young lady. A young lady that's been murdered.
I see.
The young lady happened to have purchased this teapot here.
I see.
Her name was Alma Russell.
I see.
How does a dollar an hour maid buy a $200 piece of china?
By paying $200 for it. Miss Russell paid exactly that much.
Then you remember Miss Russell.
Oh, indeed, yes. We sold it to her ourselves about 3 weeks ago. I remember the transaction well. She'd called the day before to price the teapot. The next day she came in with the money about midday on a Thursday.
Unless it was her day off, she was in uniform. Didn't it seem strange that a housemaid...
Yes, it did. I might as well tell you.
Tell me what?
The sales slip says $200. She didn't pay that for it. She paid $190 for it, tax included. We paid the difference out of our own pocket. In the trade, we are known as a sucker for hard luck stories about teapots, and Miss Russell had one.
You want to tell me about it now or later?
Miss Russell was dusting the china at the home of her employer, broke a Staffordshire teapot, hid the debris, bought another one before the accident was discovered as a replacement.
Just one more thing. Did she say who this employer was?
She did not. However, there are some regular clients of ours who eat off the stuff.
Like who?
The Llewellyns, for example, the Crandalls, the second and third, the Murrays, the Westfalls.
Which Murrays?
On West 11th, the Paul Murrays. Are we being helpful?
We'll never know how much.
Oh, it's you, Mr. Clover. Please come in.
Thanks. Mr. Murray...
You want to talk to me, don't you? This way, down the hall. Oh, Claudia, that is, Sis is practicing. We don't want to disturb her. Through this door. In here, the library. Now, do you know the man who killed my wife?
We know the kind of man who killed your wife.
Yes?
A paranoid.
Paranoid?
A person who's quick to find a reason to kill, and he doesn't need much of a reason. Just cross him...
A crazy man?
You could say that.
Well, they tell me a lot of crazies are clever, but why come to tell me about it? You should be out looking for the man.
I just thought I'd stop by and let you know how we were progressing.
I'm busy.
Oh?
My hobby. Model trains. I was assembling this engine. It's a diesel.
Oh. Careful work. Must take a lot of patience.
Please... Put it down. It's fragile. I don't allow anyone to touch it.
All right. I said I stopped by to let you know how we were progressing.
Come back when you can tell me the killer's name. And from what I've been reading, you'd better hurry up. 3 killings. Indiscriminately. By the same man.
By the same man. The way we figured, Mr. Murray, is that the killer was really only interested in killing one person. He killed the other two to make it look like what you said. Indiscriminate killings.
I don't understand.
To make it look like murder without a motive, without plan. But there was motive.
What motive for killing a 14-year-old girl?
None. Part of the plan.
And that housemaid?
None. But that was the killer's mistake. If he'd killed someone else, I wouldn't be here now.
What? You don't know what you're talking about.
Aren't you going to ask me why anyone should kill your wife?
There was no motive, like the others.
The killer had one. He had a wife. A wife who didn't want the burden of an afflicted sister-in-law. That's only a guess. Did your wife ever complain about your sister?
Get out of here.
You said your wife was a warm and open-hearted woman. She wanted children, didn't she?
You're presumptuous. You're crude. Get out of here.
You already had a child in your house, Sis, your sister. You never let her be anything but a child.
I don't have to take these insults. And put that down. Put that train down. You're crazy. Crazy. You broke it deliberately. All that work and you... I'll kill you. I'll kill you.
You're a broken toy train.
I'll kill you.
That's how you're going to convince me you're a madman.
You.
Cop an insanity plea. You're going to try harder than that. That's right. Settle down.
You broke my train.
Cut it out, Murray. You're no more crazy than I am.
sis.
Paranoid would have had reason to kill that maid, that 14-year-old girl. You killed to cover up your wife's murder.
Oh, sis.
She'll find out what happened. We'll let her know.
Sis. Oh, sis. Oh, my God.
Broadway leaps against the night. The sound it makes is the crash of life deep inside the earth and the hiss of neon, the laugh that screams. They melt together. The sound you get is shock. There's another sound, the teardrop. But no one listens. No one hears. It's Broadway, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway, my beat.
Broadway's My Beat stars Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover, with Charles Calvert as Tartaglia and Jack Crucian as Mugovan. The program was produced and directed by Elliot Lewis, with musical score composed and conducted by Alexander Courage. In tonight's story, Joseph Kearns was heard as Paul Murray. Featured in the cast were Charles Davis, Martha Wentworth, and Harry Bartell. Two styles of music, both tops in popularity, are heard every Sunday over most of these same CBS stations. Guy Lombardo's Sweetest Music This Side of Heaven is one. The other's the singing style of Mario Lanza, new vocal sensation of the airwaves. Enjoy Guy Lombardo and his Royal Canadians and the Mario Lanza Show tomorrow night. Stay tuned now for Sing It Again, which follows immediately over most of these same CBS stations. Bill Anders speaking. This is CBS, where you meet adventure with Charlie Wilde on Sundays on the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's Broadway Is My Beat from June 23rd, 1952, the Ruth Larson case, starring Larry Thor, as heard on CBS. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, someone pretty early on guessed my song from 1977, and here it is. Roger, kind of a long intro, I guess, too.
Yeah, really? You think?
I was a little too tall, could have used a few pounds. Tight pants, points, hollering out. She was a black-haired beauty with big dark eyes and points all her own, sitting way up high.
It's a way great song, right, Roger?
I give it a 3.2.
3.2.
Yeah.
Out in the back seat.
Oh, come on, man.
It actually, this made my first cut of 13 songs for that year.
Night Moves.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bob Seger, Silver Bullet Band right mm-hmm. there. I had all his records, man. Mm-hmm. Bob Seger, he was great. Just yeah. love Bob Seger.
It's a great song. It's not as good as mine, but it's a really great
yeah.
song. So
I think our listeners, I think our listeners are going to agree with me on this one.
I don't think so.
My song is the best of the three.
Okay, I'm going to take you up on that
okay,
offer
yeah.
as soon as we play mine.
All right,
I'm
tough
pretty
guy.
Sure it's mine.
All right, tough guy.
All right, big shot.
Yeah, all right. So wow. no one has guessed Roger's song.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, in this hour, it's The Great Gildersleeve from 1942. But here's Lisa's favorite song from 1977. Now, Roger, this has a really long opening.
Really long.
Yeah, so we won't be able to play a lot of it, but...
Again, this one did make my final list for that year.
Well, of course
yeah,
it did, Roger. This
course.
Is a 14.
Yeah, this
list.
Is this is a classic of that year.
It sure
almost
is.
Picked it. Almost picked it.
Picked what?
Yeah,
this
picked
song.
What? We've seen you picking it
nose.
Up there.
We watch yeah. you picking it.
All right, so
Hotel California.
Hotel California. The Eagles, that's right. Lisa, I got to say, this is a great song. And, I mean, the words are awesome. I mean, I think I know every word of this song. And we're talking about a long time ago. Yeah, so that
this
tells
is a fictitious hotel. I had to look it up.
Yeah. And, yeah, you can check in anytime you like. But
you can never
leave. You can never leave. Great song, Lisa.
Well, thank you.
It's a four. It's a four out of one to ten.
Okay, I'm telling
but
you.
But mine. I mean, Night
mine
Moves,
is the
Boogie Night.
Hotel California
Night
is
moves
the song
by,
of 77.
By, no.
You guys,
Bob
if
Seger.
You have an opinion on this, we would love to hear from you.
Uh-oh.
Hey, we,
it's
we
on now.
Appreciate
all right,
all
so,
opinions.
Folks, come on. Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band.
Come on.
Night Moves.
Hotel California.
One of the greatest bands of all time,
are you
the
kidding?
Eagles.
Exactly.
Oh, thank Eagles,
you, Roger.
Eagles.
Wow. That just elevated real fast.
See, my song
Eagles,
rocks.
Eagles Schmeagles.
Steve just texted and said my song rocks.
Anyway,
so thank you, Steve.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Hey, wait a minute. No one's guessed mine.
No, they have not. I'm watching
yours.
Roger.
312-981-7200. Try to guess Roger's song. And this hour, as all of our hours, are brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming film The Mountain Between Us about a surgeon and a journalist who survive a plane crash and are stranded in the wilderness.
Okay.
That sounds interesting.
What do they win?
It?
Yeah, I saw the trailer. It looks good.
It does look good. They're going to win two tickets to see MASH star Jamie Farr at the Mackinac Arts Center. It's on September 30th.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actress played Joanna Hoffman in Steve Jobs.
I don't care if she put a pipe bomb in the water heater. You're going to fix it now.
Got it, Lisa?
Got it.
All right. That's a strong woman there. 312-981-7200. Who is that actress? Give us a call. Win some Twilight. Well, no. What do they win? Tickets?
No, they're going to win tickets to the Mackinac Arts Center
right.
to see Jamie Farr.
All right, call us and we'll find our winner after these words.
And we're back. And we're playing Celebrity Scoop. We're going to play that clip one more time.
I don't care if she put a pipe bomb in the water heater. You're going to fix it now.
What a great actress. Right. Shantae took a caller off air, and we found out that Steve knew that that was Kate Winslet. So Steve is going to get two tickets to the Mackinac Arts Center. He's going to see MASH star Jamie Farr. It's on Tuesdays with Maury, and that is on September 30th, you can enjoy the MAC season kickoff party before the show.
Nice.
For tickets, call 630-942-4000. And I just want you to know, the listeners agree with me. It's definitely Hotel California as the winner.
Where's my fan base?
And you know what? Somebody said it so right, so I'm going to use their words.
I know I have two or three or four listeners.
Somebody suggested that I remind you that I'm always right.
Really?
So thank you for that text, and I'm just going to remind you.
I am kind of overwhelmed by how many more people like Hotel California than Night Moves.
Are you kidding? I seriously, I can't even listen to you talk. This doesn't even register in my brain.
You can't even listen to me right now?
No, this is, you're ridiculous.
Really?
Ah. It is so Hotel California.
I mean, Night Moves is so great, though.
Carl, you need some
you got to listen to the words. It's really a really interesting, cool song.
I
it's like
it
very
is.
Cool and sultry, you know.
Really? Does it have
very
a theme
sultry.
In it?
It's just great.
Just
I mean,
great
your
theme.
Song, I'm not sure what's going on in that song. It's like some crazy, spooky thing where you check into a hotel and they kidnap you or something. It's weird.
Yeah, I think that's it. They kidnap you when you get
something
to the hotel.
Something weird with that song. But anyway, right, Lisa.
But you know what? Roger has a good song.
The listeners agree with you.
Yeah. All right, we're going to move on.
I will say that.
And we'll continue to guess for Roger.
All right, so over the next 2 hours, we're going to listen to Gildy, my brother's least favorite radio show. We're going to hear Great Gildersleeve in this hour. And then in our next hour, there was a movie that Gildersleeve did called Gildersleeve's Bad Day, and it was dramatized on the Screen Guild Theater. So we'll have an episode of The Great Gildersleeve now, and then the Gildersleeve's Bad Day movie dramatized with the full cast of the Gildersleeve radio show on the Screen Guild Theater. So let's go back to April 26, 1942, for an episode called Gildy's Goat Horace. Here's Hal Perry as Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve in part one of The Great Gildersleeve.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
The Kraft Cheese Company, who also bring you Bing Crosby every Thursday night, present each week at this time Harold Perry as the Great Gildersleeve, written by Leonard L. Levinson. And now it's time to join that busy businessman, that solid citizen, and that unctuous uncle, Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, who's arrived home from the office an hour earlier than usual today because of a splitting headache.
What are you doing home at this hour?
Good afternoon, Marjorie. I closed the office early on account of a splitting headache.
Oh, that's too bad. How are you feeling?
Just wonderful.
What about the headache?
Oh, she went home.
She?
Yes, I didn't have the headache. It was my secretary, Miss Repvogel. I kept telling the girl, poor girl, to get glasses, but she thinks they'll spoil her good looks.
Oh, if that girl ever wore glasses, she could see that she hasn't any good looks.
That's probably why she doesn't wear them. Anyhow, after she left, I guess I got a touch of spring fever.
Oh, you did?
Yes, you know, in the spring, a young man's fancy lightly turns to thoughts. That's from Loxley's Hall, Tennyson.
Hey, Marge! Gee whiz, you can't imagine what wandered into our backyard just now. Hi, Uncle Mort. There's a goat in our backyard.
A goat?
Sure, a real live billy goat with all the accessories. A beard at one end and a tail at the other.
Yep.
And two horns.
Well, and a very good bumper, too, I'll bet.
What's it doing in our yard?
Well, it pulled up some of those onions you planted, and right now it's having dinner.
Onions? I never planted... Oh, good heavens, those are my crocus bulbs.
Yes, sure.
Oh, why didn't you stop him?
Hey?
Uncle Mort, please come along and help me.
Certainly, my dear. Come along, Leroy.
Oh, gee, crocus. Do you think it'll croak the goat?
Yep. Leroy, I can see you don't know very much about a goat's digestion.
Now, you get right out of my flower garden, you old devil. Uncle Mort, make him stop eating my flowers. Now tell him to quit.
Yes, all right, my dear. Now, see here. What's the goat's name, Leroy?
I don't know.
We just can't call him Anonymous. Oh, I know. Let's call him Horace after Judge Horace Hooker, huh? There's quite a resemblance between those two old goats anyway.
Oh, Uncle Mort, you don't really mean that.
No, Leroy. The goat's more intelligent looking.
Oh, hurry, Uncle Mort. Well, you've been talking that goat's eaten four crocuses, all the nasturtiums, and now he's started on my lilies.
Lilies? He has he? You get away from those lilies, Horace. Quickly now, before you wind up holding one of them. Looks like Horace has been eating the radishes, too. Hey, come on, Leroy. Help me drag him out of there.
Well, maybe I can handle him myself, Uncle Mort.
Huh?
Come on out of there, Horace, old boy. Nice little goat. Come on, palsy-walsy. Atta boy, that's right. You see, all you have to do is treat him with kindness. Oh, look, Uncle Mort, he likes you.
Well, isn't that cute?
Look out, Uncle Mort, he's chewing your sleeve.
Yeah, he is. Stop that, Horace, let go. Unhand me, sir.
Yes, Horace, don't chew Unc's sleeve. You might choke on the buttons. Be nice to your Uncle Mort.
I'm not that goat's Uncle Mort. Now, Leroy, you take this silly billy back to its owner.
Gee, Unc, I don't know who he belongs to. Nobody around here keeps goats.
He must have wandered in from out of town.
Well, he can wander right back out again. You hear that, goat? Beat it. Skidoo. Vamoose. That's Spanish for scram, Leroy. Vai para casa.
What's that?
That's Portuguese for vamoose.
Jeepers, Unc, couldn't we keep him for just a little while?
Leroy, we're not running a bide-a-wee for belligerent billy goats.
But he'd make a keen pet.
Young man, your pets have been my peeve. We've let you keep rabbits, turtles, and frogs, and chipmunks. But goats are more than I can stomach. And goodness knows I can stomach a lot.
I agree, Uncle Mort. Now, how can we get rid of him?
I'll call the city hall.
City hall?
Yes, there must be some department down there that handles runaway goats.
But, gee, Unc, why can't we just keep him?
I'll tell you why, my boy. In the first place, he doesn't belong to us. In the second place, whoever owns him might want him back. In the third place, I won't have him tearing up our place in the first place. Quiet, you. Hello.
Now, Uncle Mort, don't lose your temper.
Why shouldn't I lose my temper? Been on this telephone till I've gotten a cauliflower ear.
Well, maybe no one down at City Hall wants a goat.
There must be some department that handles them down there, Leroy. By George, what are we paying taxes for? Operator, wake up.
Good afternoon, City Hall.
Oh, good afternoon, my dear. Did you have a nice nap?
What do you want, please?
This is still Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve.
Oh, yes, the goat man. One moment, please.
One moment, please. I'd like to see Hitler hold his breath for one of her moments. Leroy, did you tie that goat to the tree like I told you to?
Yes, I did, Uncle, and he chewed through the rope.
Oh, dear, what's he doing now?
Oh, nothing, just standing there eating the rest of the rope.
Well, let's give him enough rope and maybe he'll operate her.
Who are you waiting for, please?
I want somebody to come and get my goat.
Well, just hold on. Here you are.
Hello? Health department? Entwistle speaking.
Oh, at last. Mr. Entwistle, I'm calling about a goat.
Sorry, that's not my line. I don't handle sick goats.
But this goat isn't sick.
Oh, then you want Percy Bodkin. Just a second.
Hello, Bodkin speaking.
Hello, Mr. Bodkin. We've got a goat down at our house.
Yeah, I know. It hasn't any nose. How does it smell? Terrible. I've heard that one.
No, no, no. This is a perfectly healthy goat.
Are you sure? Has it had a physical lately?
Look, it's straight into our yard. We want you to come and take it away.
But I'm just the inspector of goat's milk.
This isn't an Annie goat, it's a Bill.
Oh, Bill, he's out to lunch now. I'll have him call you when he gets back.
Operator, operator.
One moment, sir. I'm trying to help you. Here's Mr. McCorkle in Lost and Found. Go ahead, Max.
Hello. I understand you lost a coat. What kind? Overcoat, topcoat, sport coat, or a mackinaw?
No, not a coat. A goat.
Oh, a goat?
Yeah.
Here in the city hall?
No, here at home.
How could you lose a goat at home? You probably just mislaid it.
Yes, miss. I didn't mislaid it. I found it.
Well, then if you found it, why are you bothering me?
Because it isn't mine.
But does the coat fit you?
It's not a coat. It's a goat. G-O-T. Goat.
Oh. Now I understand. I'll switch you over to the park commission. They use them on the lake.
Use what on the lake?
Boats.
Oh! No. Operator, operator.
Hello. City Planning Commission.
I don't want the Planning Commission. I just want to find out how to get rid of a goat.
Oh, yes. The phone girl told me. Well, all you have to do is come down here and sign a complaint.
I'll be glad to. Then what happens?
We'll send a policeman out and he'll arrest that man. He can't keep a goat in a residential zone.
Yeah. All right, Leroy, time for you to trot off to bed.
Oh, but gee, it's early, Unc. Can't I read to the end of the chapter?
No, young man. Before you go to your room, I want you to go outside and chase that miserable goat out of our yard.
You mean tonight?
Right now, and lock the gate so he can't get back in again.
Okay, but it's a pretty tough break for the old fellow. No place to turn to late at night.
I thought you just said it was early.
Sure, for me, but not for a goat.
Yeah.
It's pretty sad.
Now, let's not get sentimental about a billy goat.
Yeah, but how would you feel if it was a cold night and you were all alone in a strange city and you were a goat?
Well, I'd feel... How do I know I'm not a goat?
Well, Uncle Mort, just supposing you were Horace.
Leroy, sit down. We're going to have a little man-to-man talk.
Gee, like Andy Hardy?
Just sit down, young man. Oh, I don't want to appear hard-hearted, but we've got to look at this entire goat problem from the practical standpoint. Understand?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Now, first of all, am I this goat's keeper? Did I invite him to come here and live with us?
No, but you never told him he couldn't come either, Unc.
What's that got to do? Let's be calm about this, Leroy. The trouble with you, young man, is that you're too impulsive.
I am?
Yes. You should carefully consider what you're jumping into and then don't jump. Why, what business would we have owning a goat?
Oh, a swell business. We could rent him out to the neighbors as a lawnmower.
Yes, a lawnmower. That's not the point, Leroy. Let's get down to cold, bare facts.
Sure. Poor old Horace is cold and bare, and that's a fact. And homeless and lonesome, too.
But you've got to realize, my boy, that that isn't our fault.
Oh, I do, Unc. And I realize it wouldn't be our fault either if we threw him out and it started to rain and he caught cold and wound up with double pneumonia.
Yes, double. Oh, yes, that's perfectly true. If you think it's going to rain.
What do we care if it does?
I never heard of a goat catching double pneumonia before.
Well, suppose he doesn't. And he may starve to death or get run over by a truck.
Oh, I'd hate to think that... Leroy, maybe I've been too impulsive.
Oh, no, Unc. Well, I guess I better go out and chase Horace out of our backyard.
Yes, you needn't bother, my boy. I'll take care of those things myself.
But you said that I was supposed to...
Never mind, Leroy. It might rain, and if that poor old goat hasn't got anywhere else to go, it won't hurt us if he spends the night under our mulberry bush.
Jeepers, Unc, then we're going to keep him?
There you go, acting impulsive again.
But he hasn't given us any trouble since he had his dinner.
Yeah, do you remember what he had for dinner? A delicious set of Grandma Gildersleeve's lace curtains.
But he won't do it again. I'll watch him, Unc. How about it?
Well, we'll see, Leroy. I'm going to see that you get straight to bed. Come on.
Oh, I'm going. You don't need to come with me, Unc.
Yeah, I'm going to my room anyway. There's an old blanket in my closet I'm going to take outside for that goat, in case it gets cold tonight, or if he gets hungry.
Oh, I don't think you need to bother, Unc. He'll be just fine without that.
Well, seeing that I'm the host, of course, I might as well. Leroy, what's going on in your room?
Oh, nothing, Unc.
Oh, nothing, eh? Well, let's take a look. Leroy, look at your mattress. That's the last straw. But do you think that was the last straw, Judge Hooker? No. I put that horse...
Horace?
That goat. I put him outside after that, and he spent the night bleeding his brains out.
Well, what have you done about it today?
Well, I placed an ad in the lost and found section of the newspaper. I expected...
Oh, Mr. Gildersleeve. Hello, Judge Hooker. Have you two heard the latest news about the Gildersleeve goat? Oh, of course you haven't. You haven't been home, I mean.
Yeah.
Well, we haven't had so much excitement in the neighborhood since that donut truck ran over that coffee salesman.
Yes. My goodness, Dottie, what's happened now?
Well, your goat has developed the worst habit. He's playing games with everybody.
What sort of games?
Well, there's one called Button, Button. Who's going to get the button?
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, it usually starts with somebody playing drop the handkerchief, and then the goat plays hop, skip, and bump, and then bingo, you're it.
Great jumping jeeps. Come on, Judge, let's go. Thank you for telling us, Dottie.
Well, that's all right. Well, the neighbors say they're going to sue you for damages, but for the life of me, I can't see why they want more damages.
Shake a leg, Judge, before that goat busts me into bankruptcy. Ooh, by George, there he is now.
Say, he's a cute-looking fella.
Yes. Now, there are people who think you're cute-looking, too, Judge, and for the very same reason.
What do you mean?
Oh, any similarity between you and that goat is purely coincidental, but there's still definitely a similarity. Bertie!
Afternoon, Mr. Gildersleeve. Afternoon to you, too, Judge.
I don't suppose the owner of that goat showed up.
No, sir, he didn't. He's a powerful, smart man, that man is. However, there was another man around here looking for to buy that goat.
Well, why didn't you sell it to him?
Well, now, supposing I did and the owner showed up. That's how people get themselves into poking.
But we have a legal right to sell this animal now, haven't we, Judge?
That's right. The decision was handed down in State of Nebraska versus 2 unclaimed guinea pigs. Later amended to Nebraska versus unspecified number of guinea pigs.
Yeah. That's fine, Judge. Now, Bertie, do you remember the name of the man who wanted to buy that goat?
No, sir, I don't.
Oh, what a pity.
But he left his card. Here it is.
Oh, his card. Good. Let's have it. Thanks. You?
I'll pick it up.
Never mind, Bertie. I'll get it.
Look out, Gildy. Get up. Here comes that goat.
What'd you say, Judge?
Run, Mr. Gildy.
What's all the commotion?
Here, let me help you up. You aren't hurt, are you, Gildy?
No, no, of course not, Judge. I'm just practicing forced landings. That's all. Where is that goat?
You better get rid of him, Mr. Gildy.
That's just what I'm going to do. I'm going to sell him right now. Where's that man's card I dropped?
Well, it was on the grass a minute ago.
Yes, it was right over. Oh, somebody stop that goat. Oh, it's too late. He just chewed up the card with the customer's name.
All right, that's the first portion of The Great Gildersleeve from April 26, 1942. More coming your way after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolfe.
So, Lisa, nobody has guessed Roger's song yet?
That is correct.
Wow.
I don't understand.
Huh.
You know, the only clue
Roger is a little bit of an enigma.
Yes, that's for sure. The only thing I could say is... somebody has guessed it at some point for somebody.
Yeah.
Just wasn't for
They've
Roger.
They've named it, just not for Roger.
Right.
Well, I mean...
And it's...
still
it's
a chance to win.
It's quite a popular song. It's nothing, you know, terribly esoteric. So keep that in mind.
How many syllables in that?
Esoteric?
Esoteric. Yeah, you're right.
Can you spell it?
Gosh. I wouldn't even attempt to do that.
Come on. It'll be fun.
It's okay.
It's fun.
Nah, it's all right.
Take a risk.
Nah.
Risk taking is free. Did you know that?
No. I don't have a parachute with me. I'm not jumping out of that airplane.
Okie dokie.
All right. So let's get back now to The Great Gildersleeve.
Back to
let's return to the great Gildersleeve, who's putting the finishing touches on a temporary goat pen to hold Horace until he can be sold, given away, or just tied to some fence and ran from.
There we are, Leroy. And there you are, Mr. Goat. Yeah. Oh, but I'm tired. I'm going to take a nap in the hammock, Leroy.
Okay, you take it easy. I'm going over to Piggy Bank's house and see if his mother will let him take Horace.
All right, only don't wake me up unless she's foolish enough to say yes.
Gee, poor Uncle Mort. He's getting to the age where he can't take these things. Oh, my gosh, dames.
Oh, there you are, Leroy. We've been looking for you, haven't we, girls?
That's right. We just come from our first aid lesson and we need a victim quick to practice on before we forget everything we learned just now.
So come on, little man. Let us bandage you up.
Nothing doing, Sally. The last time you guys wrapped up my leg, my foot was asleep all afternoon. Besides, I gotta see a lady about a goat.
Well, it looks like we'll have to practice on each other.
Oh, no. Let's see if Bertie's here.
Oh, Bertie, would you like to come out here and be a victim?
A victim of what, Miss Marge? Circumstances?
No. Of a broken leg, sprains, burns, everything.
No, ma'am. I have absolutely no inclinations in that direction.
We just want to practice first aid on you. We're just going to pretend that you're hurt.
Can't you do it just pretending I'm bad, too? I've got a pressing engagement to press that dress you want to wear tonight. But if you want me to leave that to go
no,
on...
No, Bertie, no. We'll find someone else.
Oh, say, Marge, isn't that your uncle over there in the hammock?
Yeah.
Oh. He'd make an awfully jolly patient, wouldn't he?
Well, I don't know. You think we've got enough bandages to go around him?
Let's go over and ask him, huh? Come on, girl.
All right, well, let's be quiet.
Mr. Gildersleeve, do you mind if we use you as a dummy to practice our first aid on in the kind of nobody else will, and you don't have to disturb yourself in the least because we can go right ahead just the way you are.
The shoe flies go away.
He's asleep. We shouldn't disturb him, Dottie.
If Uncle Mort's asleep, I don't think even Dottie can disturb him.
Yeah.
Do you mean it's all right to proceed?
Sure. Just as long as we don't treat him too roughly or push him out of the hammock.
Oh, goody. I've just been waiting for a chance like this to practice my tourniquet. Now, just hold still, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Well, this would be a good time to work on chest bandages.
No, I'm afraid we'd have to get him up for that.
Well, couldn't I just roll the bandage around him and the hammock?
Oh, yes. Yes, that would seem logical. Well, what are you going to do, Margie?
Oh, I think I'll work on that treatment for burns and rub some of this salve on Uncle's face. It'll probably keep him from getting sunburnt, too. Mm. Ooh, this salve is certainly strong. Mm.
My, your uncle is certainly a sound sleeper.
Yes, just listen to that sound.
I never thought it would take so many mat bandages to go around your uncle's circumference, Marjorie.
Yes, that takes in a lot of territory, doesn't it?
Gosh, but this stuff is sticky. Anyone have an extra handkerchief?
Mm-hmm. Just a second and I'll be through. Then?
Oh! Dottie Dobson, what are you doing to my uncle?
Well, I'm just tightening this tourniquet.
But good heavens, Dottie, you never use a tourniquet on the neck. Quick, I'm twisted. Uncle. Are you all right? Wake up, Uncle. Maybe we better help him sit up.
Oh, he can't sit up. He's bandaged to the hammer.
In that case, we better...
Oh, my goodness, what's that?
It's our goat. He wants out.
Oh, he got out, too.
Oh, dear, he's had it this way. What do we do?
Oh, quick, girls, into the house. Oh, hurry, Marjorie.
But I can't leave Uncle Mort like this. Oh, here he comes. Goodbye, Uncle Mort.
I can't get up. Who tied me down here? Well, why'd you do it? Oh, it's you. What do you want? You'll get away from me. Oh, your nose is cold. Quit licking my face. Horace, your beard tickles.
Mr. Gilsey, don't you think you'd better figure out some way to get rid of that goat? Because the animosity against him on the outside is beginning to penetrate on the inside.
What do you mean, Bertie?
Well, I happen to know a certain very reliable and capable cook
who has been offered a most lucrative position in a completely goatless household. Or should I be more specific?
Yes. No. I think I understand, Bertie, and I'm trying to get rid of Horace, too.
Well, I sure hope you does, and instantaneously, too. I'm tired of flying a kite from the second floor every time I got clothes to dry and wearing a skillet whenever I have to bustle out into the yard. And you folks ain't had it so easy either, eating them buffet dinners every night standing up.
Yeah. Well, let's not go into that, Bertie. It's a painful subject.
Oh, excuse me, Uncle Mort. I didn't know you were here.
Come here, young man.
Oh, me, Uncle?
Of course you. Leroy, did you have anything to do with Horace chasing the postman down the street and then eating our morning mail?
Well, only indirectly, Uncle Mort.
Huh?
You see, I was trying to train him to fetch the mail inside every morning the way Piggy Bank's dog does.
Well, he fetched it inside, all right.
Maybe we ought to buy him a muzzle.
What's the use? He'd eat that, too. What we should do is saw off his horns, trim off his beard, and then tip off the dog catcher.
Can't do that, Uncle Mort. He likes you.
Yeah.
Every time he sees you, a look steals into his great, big, beautiful blue eyes.
Too bad I couldn't see that look when I was bending over to find the keyhole last night. He knocked me clear into the sitting room. Now what? As if I didn't know.
Mr. Gildersleeve?
Yes, that's me.
I'm from the city hall. Do you keep a goat on these premises in violation of the city zoning code? Of course you do. I can see him from here. You a county license to conduct a goat dairy is provided for in the civil statutes of this state? I thought not. Has aforesaid goat proven a nuisance, disturber of the peace, and menace to life, limb, and real estate values? I thought as much. Better get rid of him at once, Gildersleeve. That goat is butting into everybody's business.
All right, that's enough of me. Get your cap, Leroy, and come along.
Okay. Where are we going, Uncle?
You heard the man. We're going to take that backyard battering ram out to the country and get rid of him. Hey, here, Horace. Come on, nice little goat. Yeah, sure. You lead him around to the car, Leroy.
All right. Careful, Uncle. You'll trip. Your shoelace is untied.
Shoelace untied? Oh, thank you. I better fix it now.
Oh, look out, Uncle. Here comes Horace.
I don't see him. Where is he?
Right back here. No, Horace.
I fooled him that time.
How, Unc?
I'm wearing my air raid warden helmet where it'll do the most good.
Slow down, Uncle Mort. Let's try that farmer up ahead.
That farmer? Oh, yes, but this is our eighth stop, Leroy. I never thought there were so many goat haters in this part of the country. Hello there, neighbor.
Well, hello there.
How would you like to buy a dandy goat at a cheap price?
No, thank you, gentlemen.
Gee, why not?
These goats are too stubborn. They're used like jackasses.
But just look at this animal. He's a genuine Jim.
A genuine Jim? He looked more like a York by genuine.
You can have him for only $2.
No, too high.
All right, I'm tired of hauling him around the countryside. You can have him for nothing.
That's still too high.
Well, then suppose I give you $3 or $4. How about that?
Oh, no, you're yoshing me.
I'm not yoshing you. Joshing you. Well, what do you say?
No.
But why not?
That goat is worth $10, for sure. If you ask less, something went wrong, sure. You get along now. Get off my property. I don't want no dealings with hot goats.
Well, for the hot goat.
Oh, Horace, what have you done? Gee, Uncle, look at the upholstery in the back seat.
The upholstery? Oh, where is it?
I guess he ate us.
All right, brother, this is the end of the line.
What you gonna do, Uncle?
Open that back door, Leroy. Now, get out, Horace. Shut the door quickly, Leroy.
All right. Goodbye, Horace.
Yeah, goodbye, Horace. Yeah. Well, let's get home, Leroy. Yes, it's... My goodness, look, we're out of gas, Leroy.
Horace, get away from those tires.
It's 7 o'clock, Miss Marge. You still want to wait dinner for Mr. Gildersleeve and Leroy?
Oh, yes, Bertie. Just a little while longer, anyhow. Oh, I do hope they come back without that goat.
Yes, ma'am, and so does everybody else who's ever come in contact with him.
though to give the devil his dues, that horse had the most personality I ever saw in a goat. Too bad it was all negative.
Oh, I don't know what we'll do if they bring him back again. Do you think we could hide him someplace where the neighbors wouldn't find out?
No, ma'am. They'd sure get the wind of it somehow.
I guess you're right.
Well, here we are. Oh. Is dinner ready, Bertie?
Yes, sir. How about that horse, goat?
Oh, we found out who owned him and gave him back.
You did? Who does he belong to?
The Summerfield Railroad Yard.
The railroad yard? Well, I've heard of donkey engines and cow catchers, but what do goats do on the railroad?
Well, Horace works down at the stockyards. He leads the sheep out of the pens and into the boxcars.
Yeah, and when he ran away, they thought he'd been shipped somewhere by mistake.
Yes, they were terribly glad to get him back again because it's practically impossible to move the sheep unless he leads them.
Oh, well, thank goodness that's all over.
You said it.
Well, now, if you folks get all cleaned up, I'll put dinner on right away.
Oh, dinner, and have I got an appetite.
Yeah, me too. Come on, Uncle Mort.
Yeah, sure. You don't know what a load this is off my shoulders. Why, I feel like I feel like something's wrong. What's that noise outside?
Oh, I can't imagine. It sounds like... You better go to the door, Uncle.
Yes, I'll soon find out. Oh, great jumping jeeps. Horace has come back again, and he's brought all his little sheep friends with him.
Great Gildersleeve will be with us again in just a few minutes. Meanwhile, I'd like to mention that macaroni and cheese is one of America's favorite dishes. And now Kraft makes it possible for you to prepare this favorite dish in only 7 minutes. You do it with a product called Kraft Dinner. For Kraft Dinner gives you a special quick-cooking macaroni that gets fluffy tender in boiling water in a hurry. No need to blanch and bake this macaroni. Also in the Kraft Dinner package is some Kraft grated that puts grand cheese flavor into the macaroni quick. You spend just 7 minutes at the stove to get tender macaroni drenched in cheese goodness. It's a kitchen miracle that will thrill you and delight the whole family. Kraft Dinner is a main dish all by itself, 4 good servings in every box. If you serve it molded into a ring and filled with cream seafood, you have a real party dish in a jiffy. So don't bother with blanching and baking macaroni anymore. Don't fuss with grating cheese and making a cream sauce. Give them grand macaroni and cheese cooked in 7 minutes. Stock up on Kraft Dinner tomorrow.
Ladies and gentlemen, in this war that we're fighting, there are a million stirring stories of valor and endurance and personal sacrifice. At this very moment, on every ocean, men of our Navy are writing an heroic page in our history.
And in order that they may fight with untroubled hearts, secure in the knowledge that their loved ones at home are not in distress, the Navy Relief Society is asking us to contribute a fund of $5 million.
That's right, Marjorie. For 40 years, the men of our Navy, Marine Corps, and Coast Guard have provided immediate, direct relief for their dependents themselves. But now, since Pearl Harbor, the need has become much greater. And so all of us are going to have the privilege of helping.
Give now, and give generously. Either to your local Navy Relief Drive, or to the Navy Relief Society, 730 Fifth Avenue, New York City.
That's right, 730 Fifth Avenue, New York City. Thank you, and good night, ladies and gentlemen.
Original music heard on this program was composed and conducted by William Randolph. This is Jim Bannon speaking for the Kraft Cheese Company and inviting you to be with us again next week at this same time for the further adventures of the Great Gildersleeve. This program has come to you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
That is The Great Gildersleeve from April 26, 1942. Gildersleeve's Goat Horace, starring Hal Perry. And what a great cast of characters in the show, too. They had Lillian Randolph, Lorene Tuttle, Mel Blanc, Walter Tetley. And, you know, Walter Tetley, as you probably know, played Sherman. Do you know that, Roger? He played Sherman on the Mr. Peabody Remember, oh, hang on a second. Put your mic on there. Remember the Mr. Peabody?
Yeah, of course I remember.
Yeah, it was. He was Sherman on there. And then I'm trying to think, who was the dog? Oh, gosh. Somebody famous was the dog on there, too.
The voice actor on it.
Yeah, I'll think of it. Okay. But also Earl Ross in this. And, yeah, the goat in this was played by Mel Blanc. He played the goat on this particular broadcast.
He had a million voices.
Yeah,
he really, really did. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll play some commercials. We'll come back, and we'll talk with Roger Badish. Nobody has guessed his song yet. We'll be right back. All right, well, I did have a bunch of people text in and say that Night Moves was a much better song than Hotel California because they said I was being victimized. Because the Eagles are a more popular band than Bob Seger. Okay. But Night Moves is actually a better song than Hotel California. Mm-hmm. Think about it. What is Hotel California even about, right,
just,
Roger?
Just
do you have
declare,
a, something
got,
in your
sorry,
frog in your throat?
Sorry, frog,
frog in your throat?
Throat?
Yeah.
I have to clarify your comment.
Was Mel Blanc playing the frog?
I have to clarify your comment. First of all, Carl has never been victimized.
I am being victimized.
And second of all, a bunch is two. In your particular comment, there are two people that agreed with you,
good.
And about 10 million
let's not exaggerate
me.
It
oh, no,
all
I wouldn't
here.
Do that.
Ms. Wolf.
You got
Mrs.
two.
Wolf.
You did get two supporters, so for you,
two
I'm
supporters.
Happy.
Yeah. Well,
how many do you need?
One on each side.
I was going to say.
Support
yeah.
the Sox.
Yeah. Well, listen, I had some loyal listeners
you
text
two,
in and
you
say
two loyal listeners.
Carl was being victimized, and mm-hmm. I couldn't agree with that person more. Thank you out there,
Family
Radio
is
Land.
So good to have.
You know, but if you if you actually play the song and listen to the words,
right. I
hear Night Moves
better.
Is way
should,
better. Way better
have
than
to
Hotel
concentrate.
California.
It should just be a feeling. It's just
so
how
Roger.
Your heart
Roger
feels.
Badish is with us here. Yeah. Roger,
where's my song?
I don't know. Nobody can figure out what your song is. It's a mystery. You're a mystery.
77.
Roger, yeah. You're a mystery.
I am a puzzle wrapped up in an enigma.
Enigma. Yeah. I did. I said Roger's an enigma.
He did.
That's right.
Yeah. So. And it's actually a pretty popular song. I'm surprised.
It's a great song. Yeah. It's a popular song, mm-hmm. and it's a. I don't want to say anything. It's a major. I mean, everybody's heard of this band and this song.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Stop with the clues now.
Because she just gave a big one.
That's a pretty big clue there,
yeah.
Lisa.
Oh, huge.
It's huge.
You can't. She doesn't follow the rules, Lisa.
What?
She doesn't follow rules.
That's okay.
She's a. She's
you know,
a,
I've heard you slip up.
You're
a scofflaw.
She's
oh,
a.
I'm not slipping up.
Lisa, how about this word? Scofflaw.
Oh.
Scoff.
Yep.
Huh? What do you think, Roger?
Well, eh? Listen, I'm going to read
one.
A text
a
now.
Big word.
This guy says neither of those songs are any good.
So there.
And I can't believe the show is on the radio.
Oh,
whoa,
really?
Hello.
Yeah. So what can I say?
Ooh, boy. Well, he's
rough
a
night.
He's a hater. He
yeah.
or she.
Hater. It's a he.
It's a he. All right.
Well, you ought to listen to something else.
Ouch. That hurt. Oh, man. I might be able to walk.
Yeah, at least he was
I can't
listening
walk.
And
that
thought
hurt.
Enough to send a text.
That hurt.
All right.
Nice
of him.
That's not so nice.
Give us a try.
That hurt. All right. When we come back from the news, we are going to play a radio adaptation of the second movie in the four movies that Hal Perry starred in the Great Gildersleeve sort of movie what do you call it? Four movies. So what is that?
A quartet?
A quartet of movies.
There you go.
Yeah, thanks, Roger. Yeah, you know, the movies,
that doesn't sound
did you
right.
ever see any of these movies? One was called The Great Gildersleeve. The other one was Gildersleeve's Bad Day, which we're going to have a radio adaptation of. Gildersleeve's Ghost, and then Gildersleeve on Broadway. Never seen any of them.
I
have never seen
I
any
might
of those movies.
Have many, many long moons ago.
Yeah.
Gildersleeve's Ghost sounds really
okay.
familiar. And I do believe I have seen that one, you know, late night TV, black
yeah.
and white. You know,
sure, Turner or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, yeah.
These were RKO films. Mm-hmm. And it took them about a month to film them. That's it.
Isn't
one
that
one
yeah.
month to film
right.
each
because
one
I
of these.
Because I remember seeing him in film
yeah.
as opposed to a TV show.
Hal
or something
Perry,
like that.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, thank you, Esmeralda, and thank you, Roger. Roger, I don't know. We'll hopefully someone will text in your song. I don't know. We'll see.
It's like I'm like the Rubik's Cube.
You are. Yeah, you are.
You just can't get that
you are
last color lined up.
I know. I don't understand how that works. And I can't believe how people can do that anyway, the Rubik's Cube thing. It's pretty crazy, right? Did you ever see that?
No.
Some of these people.
I have a Rubik's Cube. I still have a Rubik's Cube.
And they do
cube.
It?
I think
like
the
crazy.
World's record is like 4 seconds.
Yeah.
Wow.
People do that for a living.
They actually,
yeah.
They were teaching it in a math class in high school. It was actually part of the course.
Really?
Logic, using logic and calculations and all that other stuff.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so pretty cool.
I don't know how people can do that.
No,
but
I can't do it now because
it's amazing.
My fingers don't really work well. So
amazing stuff. All right, you know
blame
what?
Blame it on the fingers. Right
in
there.
This hour, we have a radio adaptation of the Gildersleeve film, Gildersleeve's Bad Day, on the Screen Guild Theater, starring Hal Perry. And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming science fiction film Geostorm, about a satellite designer who tries to save the world from a storm of epic proportions.
All right, the number to call, 312-981-7200. What do they win?
They're going to win a pair of tickets to see MASH star Jamie Farr at the Mackinac Arts Center on September 30th.
This actor played King Leonidas in 300.
And of course, Spartans have the reputation to consider.
All right, who is that great actor? 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after these words.
And we're back, and we're playing Celebrity Scoop. We're going to play it again.
And of course, Spartans have the reputation to consider.
All right, who is that?
I don't know. We've got Gary on the line. Maybe he can tell us. Hi, Gary.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm real good.
Good.
Say hi to your partner, Carl.
All right, hi, Carl.
Hi, Gary.
So who's that actor?
I'm believing it's Gerard Butler.
It's Gerard Butler, and he's not so bad looking. I just thought I'd throw that
talking
out there.
Talking about me or Gerard?
I was talking about both of you.
Oh, thanks.
So you are a winner, Gary. You have won two tickets to see MASH star Jamie Farr at the Mackinac Arts Center. It's in Tuesdays with Maury, which is the story that changed millions of lives. It's on September 30th, and you get to enjoy the MAC season kickoff party before the show. For tickets, you can go to 630-942-4000, but you won two tickets for September 30th, so we hope you have a great night there.
Oh, I hope I do, too. I'm looking forward to it. I thank you very, very much.
You're
thank
welcome,
you
Gary.
For staying up
thank
late
you.
With us.
All right.
You have a good night.
You
thanks.
Too. Thanks, Gary. All right. He's a big winner. He's going to see a fun show, and we're going to listen to a fun radio program now. As I said, Gildersleeve, Hal Perry, you know, this character of Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve actually originated on the Fibber McGee and Molly show. He was Fibber's next-door neighbor, and the character became so popular that it spun off into its own radio show, and that radio show was every bit as popular as Fibber McGee and Molly, the show it spun off of. And then, interestingly, they decided, well, we've done movies with Fibber McGee and Molly, so let's do movies with the Gildersleeve character. They made four movies in the 1940s. They were not hugely popular, but they were, you know, they made money. They did four of them. They were RKO films. The four films were The Great Gildersleeve, Gildersleeve's Bad Day, which is what we're going to listen to, Gildersleeve's Ghost, and Gildersleeve on Broadway. So the Screen Guild Theater, as you know, was a radio show where they would take a film and dramatize it for radio airplay. And usually they had the stars of the film kind of recreating their roles before the microphone. And this night, which was August 13th, 1945, they recreated the 1943 film Gildersleeve's Bad Day, starring Hal Perry and all of his radio gang. You had everybody from the radio show on this, including Walter Tetley and Louise Erickson, Lillian Randolph, Earl Ross, Richard LeGrand, and, of course, the star Hal Perry. So let's tune this in. Here's part one of the Lady Esther Screen Guild Theater with Gildersleeve's Bad Day.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, Lady Esther presents the Screen Guild players in RKO Radio Pictures' delightful comedy, Gildersleeve's Bad Day. It stars Harold Perry in his famous screen and radio character, The Great Gildersleeve, supported by his well-known cast of characters. The Lady Esther Screen Guild players in Gildersleeve's Bad Day. As it must come eventually to all good men and true, there comes now to certain citizens of Summerfield the call.
Got a summons for you. Jury duty tomorrow morning. Judge Hooker's court.
It's the case of the state versus Louis Barton, who was caught while robbing the First National Bank. And to some of Louis's faithful pals, the impending trial spells double trouble.
I see the afternoon paper, well. They give Louis the whole front page.
Then they know they're going to get him towed, unless we do something.
Like what?
Well, like this letter I took up today. Listen, Toad, get a load of this. Dear sir, if you can persuade yourself and the other juries that Louis Barton is not guilty, there will be $1,000 in United States currency delivered to you immediately after Louis is sprung. Signed, anonymous.
Oh, going to send it to one of the jurors, huh?
Well, Natch.
Yeah, but which one? Suppose we picked the wrong character, and he's ethical to the extent of putting us where Louis is.
We won't pick the wrong one. I got the jury list right here. Let me see. Richard Peavy?
No, he owns the drugstore. He probably don't need the dough.
Oh. Mr. Henry Potter? Nah. He won't be taking the money. The paper says he's getting married tonight. Now, here's a name. Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve.
Are you kidding?
That's what it says here. Throckmorton P.
Don't go no further, Al. I heard enough. Well, any guy with a label like that, I'll bet 8-1 that guy's our pigeon.
And besides, they found poison in the food. Enough poison to kill everybody in the house. And they proved an innocent man had been wrongly convicted. What do you say to that?
Mr. Gildersleeve, you want your eggs boiled?
Yes, please, Bertie. Then there's the case of State versus Minnie Hofberger, Boston, 1923. Minnie was accused of throwing her husband out of a third-story window. He lit on a pile of coal.
Hot or soft?
That's beside the point, Bertie. It was a pile of coal.
I mean the eggs, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Oh, the eggs. About 4 minutes, Bertie. If you can do it in three, so much the better.
Morning, Uncle Mort.
Well, good morning, Leroy. Now, Bertie, to continue.
A letter for you, Uncle. It was in the mailbox.
Letter? Thank you, my boy. Let's see. Now, where was I? Oh, yes. The defendant was on the stand undergoing cross-examination. Isn't it true that you discussed the possibility of murdering your husband?
Huh?
Well, isn't it?
Mr. Gildersleeve, I ain't even married.
Answer the question. Answer the question, yes or no?
No, sir.
Your witness, sir.
Mine?
I mean, she may step down.
Mr. Gildersleeve, I ain't even up.
You're not going to be the district attorney in this trial. You're just going to be a juror.
Be quiet, Leroy, quiet. Besides, what's more important than a juror? Especially one with my legal background.
Yeah, I guess a background's pretty important when all you have to do is sit.
Yep. That's beside the point, Leroy. And furthermore...
Somebody's honking outside.
Uncle Mort, Judge Hooker and your share of the ride group are waiting out front.
They are? Bertie, never mind the eggs. Just pour me a slice of toast. I mean, slice me a cup of coffee. Oh, forget it. I'll go along as I am.
In your bathrobe?
I promised I'd be ready with... Huh? Silly me. My coat's in the hall. Here, Marjorie, I'll leave this robe with you.
Good idea, Uncle Mort. I plan to send it to the cleaners today.
Oh, I'll have to rush. Goodbye, everybody, and wish me luck.
Why should we have to wish him luck? Uncle Mort's not on trial.
No, but the trial isn't over yet.
Now, sir, your name is Louis Barton.
Well,
I object.
What you object? Now, look, Gildersleeve, you're just a juror.
Your Honor, he was asking a leading question.
Quiet.
In Section 364 of the Penal Code, it specifically states...
Quiet, Throckmorton, and sit down.
You old goat.
Prosecutor will continue.
Thank you, Your Honor. Now then, will the defendant please tell the court his name?
My name's Louis Barton.
And your occupation?
Explosives engineer.
Oh, I see. I see. And, of course, that accounts for your possession of a bottle of nitroglycerin when arrested in the alley back of the First National Bank on the night of...
I object!
Your Honor, this is too much. Is this juror acting as defense counsel, too?
If it pleases Your Honor...
Silence!
But, Your Honor, it's not been proved that the defendant had nitroglycerin in his possession. And the bottle in question has not been introduced as evidence. According to Section 300...
Throckmorton Gildersleeve, you will return to your seat and listen to the evidence, or this court will find you in contempt.
But, Horace, at your...
Sit down!
Yes, sir.
District Attorney will proceed.
They're hanging an innocent man.
Leroy, you think Uncle Mort will be on the jury very long?
Not if the jury has anything to say about it. Gee, I hope he'll be free soon, Marge. We need him to help us raise money for the canteen fund.
Mm-hmm. Unky's done better than anyone. He got Mrs. Hastings to pledge $1,000. She's going to send it over tomorrow.
Gee, that's swell. $1,000. And with what we raised at the dance and on the program.
And our home front drive.
Home front drive? What's that?
That was Mary Ellen's idea. You see, you go to the butcher and the grocer and people like that, and you say, we think you ought to give 10% of all the business you get from us this week. You can raise a lot of money that way.
Why don't you just get a gun?
Don't be silly. It's for charity. Here, help me check this bundle for the cleaners. Uncle Mort's blue suit and his brown suit and his cutaway.
He hasn't worn that since Hoover was elected.
Well, you can't tell. The Republicans might win again someday. His sport coat, his gray suit.
Hey, that gray suit was just cleaned last week.
Leroy, don't be petty. Another cleaning won't hurt it a bit. Smoking jacket, bathrobe.
Oh, hold it, Marge. Something just dropped out of the bathrobe pocket. Look, a letter. I wonder if...
Don't you dare open that letter, Leroy.
Oh, I wouldn't open it. It's open already. You know, Uncle Mort was wearing this robe at breakfast.
Leroy.
Well, after all, it might be important, and he might have forgotten it in the rush, and being tied up in the jury, he might want us to... Holy smoke.
What's the matter?
Get a load of this. If you can persuade yourself and the other jurors that Louis Barton is not guilty... Gee, somebody's trying to bribe Uncle Mort.
Why, that's ridiculous.
No, it's anonymous. He's offering $1,000.
$1,000 or $1,000,000. It wouldn't do any good. And Leroy, you can just forget that letter. Uncle Mort is as honest as the day is long. He'll be the first one to send that crook to jail.
Sure he will, Marge. Sure he will. I hope.
I'm sorry, gentlemen, but I must be honest with myself. I find I'm still forced to vote not guilty.
Oh, Gildersleeve.
But, Gildersleeve, we're 11-1 for conviction. After all, man, the evidence.
The evidence is purely circumstantial. I'll leave it to Mr. Peavy here.
Wouldn't say that. Your man was caught right there in the bank.
That makes no difference. Anybody might walk into a bank, even me. This fellow is simply a victim of circumstances.
And I wouldn't say that. He's already served 3 terms for a robbery.
This has nothing to do with the case, Peavy. Remember, there were no fingerprints. There was no loot found on his person. No corpus delicti.
Oh, Gildersleeve, you don't know what you're talking about. We're 11-1. Now vote for conviction and let's get out of here.
Mr. Potter, this is a matter of justice.
That's what I say, huh? Got to get back to my drugstore.
Peavy, you can get somebody else to take care of your drugstore.
Yes, but what about me? I was married last night. What about my wife?
Anybody else got any questions?
How about it, gents? Any decision yet?
Not yet, bailiff. We're still tied up.
It's midnight, gents. You gonna stay out all night?
We will if Gildersleeve has his way.
It's after 2, gents. You gonna be much longer?
Well, I wouldn't say too much longer, bailiff. I think we're beginning to see eye to eye.
Hello? Huh? Yeah, this is Judge Hooker. What's the idea, bailiff? It's 3 in the morning. Oh, you reached a decision, huh? All right. I'll get dressed and come over. Gentlemen of the jury, have you arrived at a verdict?
We have, Your Honor. We find the defendant not guilty.
Did you say not guilty?
Mm-hmm. That's right, Judge.
Very well. The defendant is discharged.
Thanks, Your Honor. Thanks, fellas.
Gentlemen, I don't have to tell you my opinion of this verdict. How 12 men could so utterly disregard
the
evidence...
We want to convict him, Judge, but Gildersleeve convinced us of a reasonable doubt.
Oh, Gildersleeve. Well, I'm convinced of a reasonable doubt myself.
Oh, are you, Horace? Are you really?
Yes, a reasonable doubt of my own sanity in ever having let you serve as a juror in this court. That's all, gentlemen. Jury's dismissed.
Well, we done it, Louie. We done it, all right.
Yeah, what do you mean?
Told me we sprung you. We got you out of that rap.
Huh? Yeah, sure, sure. That fat guy on the jury, Gildersleeve. We got to him for a grand. That's why he held out.
Yeah, that's why it took us so long. Yeah.
No kidding. Well, boys, that was swell. And your pal Louie ain't gonna... Where'd you get the grand?
Oh, we just promised it to him.
Yeah, sure, sure. We never had no real intentions.
Hey, now, wait a minute. You say you promised the guy a grand?
Yeah.
Then the guy gets a grand.
Louis, are you nuts?
No, I'm ethical. The guy did like you told him, didn't he? He kept his part of the deal, didn't he? So we keep ours. Louis Barton ain't no Welcher.
But we ain't got the grand.
So we get a grand. It's early yet, and I know just the spot.
But Louis, you just got out of one rap.
You heard me. I said Louis Barton ain't no Welcher. Now, pipe down, both of you. Get out the tools.
The second act of the Lady Esther Screen Guild play will follow in a moment.
All right, there's the first portion of Gildersleeve's Bad Day, a radio enactment of the film from August 13, 1945, on the Lady Esther Screen Guild Theater, starring Hal Perry. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes. First, these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
How's our show going? How's the new show idea going?
I think it's going really well.
Gosh, folks, we really have a great idea for another show, but
we seriously have to do a demo on it.
Yeah,
before
we'll do a demo.
We're taken seriously.
Yeah. The name of the show is called Listen to Lisa and Maybe Carl.
Yeah.
And
we think
people
it's
call
perfect.
In and they have, you know, daily questions about life. And Lisa has
life,
a master's degree in psychology. She's her degree is in psychology. That's why she's great. I mean, I call her all week long with all
you
my
just asked
I
me
so
a
many problems.
Question just
I have,
a moment ago.
I have like, I have like five problems that she's solving at any given time, and then 12 more come up while she's solving the five. And but you do solve all my problems.
Well,
it's
not that simple, but
yeah,
the good thing is
really
we have
smart.
Completely different perspectives on life, and sometimes they come together and sometimes
so people
they
would
don't
call
be
in, right, and they would have a problem, and Lisa would be the main person solving it, and then I would give my point of view on it. So it's called Listen to Lisa and Maybe Carl.
We love it.
Yeah, I think it's good.
I'm sure Stephanie and Todd are listening right now, and they're just running right over.
I don't think it's happening, but we should do a demo.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do a demo for it. Yeah. All right. So maybe we'll have somebody call in. We'll do a demo. We'll do a demo, and then
it'll be real.
I think it'd be fun.
Let's try it.
But in the meantime, let's listen to the conclusion to Gildersleeve's Bad Day on the Lady Esther Screen Guild Theater.
Now, Lady Esther presents the second act of Gildersleeve's Bad Day, starring Harold Perry as the Great Gildersleeve. Well, it's later the same morning, considerably later, and glowing with a little sleep and a righteous sense of duty well done, Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve comes down to breakfast.
Well, good morning, everybody. Beautiful morning. Good morning, Leroy.
Good morning.
And Marjorie, my dear, how are you this morning?
I'm not quite sure. The papers say you set that criminal free last night.
Uh-huh. It's good to know that justice isn't always blind. I like to think...
Uncle Mort, how could you?
Yes, I... How could I what?
A leading citizen, upright and respected, doing an awful thing like that.
What are you talking about?
Not you, stolen, Unc. We saw the letter.
Letter? What letter? What in the world are you...
Go ahead, Marge. Show it to him. Here it is, Uncle Mort.
It was in the pocket of your bathrobe.
Huh?
Go on, read it.
Read it. Dear sir, if you can persuade yourself and the other jurors... But this isn't mine. I never saw this letter.
Are you kidding? You opened it.
You mean yesterday? That's right, I did open it. But I never read it. Don't you remember, my dear, the carpool came by and I left in a rush?
That's true, Marge, he did.
And Uncle Mort, you mean you never made a deal with this person?
Of course not. I held out for acquittal because I honestly believed the defendant was innocent.
Oh, Uncle Mort, I'm so glad.
Sweet idea. You might at least have given me the benefit of the doubt, just because you found that letter.
Oh, gee, we're sorry, Uncle Mort. It hurt us, too.
Yeah, well, next time, don't be so quick to judge.
Miss Gildersleeve.
Yes, Bertie?
Man just left his envelope for you.
Well, thank you, Bertie. And you children needn't look so suspicious. I'll open it right now.
Holy smoke! Money!
$10 $100 bills. And a note. Here is the money as promised.
Oh, Uncle Mort, and we believed you.
No, he wouldn't make a deal, not him.
Now, just a moment, you two. You don't really think that... Oh, this is awful. Fantastic. It's the most... Wait a minute. I know.
Sure, so do we.
Yep. It's for Mrs. Hastings, for the canteen fund. She said she sent over $1,000 today.
Of course, that's it. Oh, Uncle Mort, I'm so sorry.
Hold on to your hats. Here we go again.
Leroy, this is no time for jokes. Once and for all, I want it plainly understood that I had nothing whatever to do with those crooks.
We're really sorry. We apologize.
Well, accepted. That leaves me only one thing to do.
What?
Take this money over to Judge Hooker's place. Isn't he chairman of the fund?
Gildersleeve, I shouldn't even be talking to you this morning. After the way you acted last night...
Now, Horace, that's not the right sort of attitude. I brought you a contribution to the canteen fund. $1,000 for Mrs. Hastings. Here you are.
Oh? Well, in that case, Sorry I've been so touchy, Gildy. Not getting any sleep and all.
Sure, Horace, it's your old age. I understand that.
Put this money in the safe and I'll write you a receipt.
Yeah, Horace, safe. Wouldn't it be better in the bank?
Why?
Well, I mean, that safe doesn't look very rugged to me.
Oh, nonsense, Gildy. It's guaranteed to be burglar-proof. Got $1,000 of my own money in here.
Oh.
We are. I just put this envelope in my, Hey, that's funny.
Oh? What's the matter, Horace? Anything wrong?
Wrong? Wrong? Why, you simpering idiot, I've been robbed.
Yeah. Honestly, Peavy, you should have seen him. I thought Horace was going to blow a fuse. I'll have another cup of coffee, please.
That makes four altogether.
Yeah.
Were there any clues, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Clues? Oh, lots of fingerprints. But they were all Judge Hooker's. I suggested they take Horace in on suspicion. Yeah, that's when he really got mad.
I can imagine. Well, they ought to trace that money pretty easy. I understand the judge kept a record of all the numbers of the bills.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's only natural. They were big bills, I hear. $10 $100 notes.
$10 $100.
Good afternoon, Mr. Peavy.
Oh, hello, Mrs. Hastings.
And Mr. Gildersleeve, how lucky for me. I was just going out to your place with this check.
Check?
Yes. For the canteen fund. $1,000.
$1,000.
Well, I promised it to you, don't you remember?
Oh, yes. I certainly. Thanks, Mrs. Peavy. Hastings. Thanks a lot. $1,000. I got to rush now. A lot of things to do. Be seeing you sometime. Oh, brother, much obliged. Goodbye.
Such an odd man. But he must have so many things on his mind.
Well, I agree he's odd, all right, but... Not so sure. He's got a mind.
Don't you see, Marjorie, it all adds up. If that $1,000 I got didn't come from Mrs. Hastings...
It must have come from someone else.
From those crooks.
Right. They must have thought I was playing their little game with them.
And they robbed Judge Hooker to pay you off.
Oh, brother. That's what makes it so bad. Horace has the numbers of those stolen bills. And when he checks that money I took to him...
He'll figure you're the one who robbed his safe.
Gee, Hunk, you're in a spot. You could go to jail.
Leroy, don't mention that word. Oh, Oh, how do I get into these things?
Must be a talent.
Yeah.
Uncle Mort, what'll you do? You can't deny you gave that money to Judge Hooker.
No.
And now it's in his safe. You can't get it out.
No. 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 I can't, can I? I can't get it out.
Gee, what has he got to laugh about?
I guess it's the strain. Come on, Leroy. We better put him to bed.
I can't get it out, can I?
Gee, Louie, this is sure a swell idea, coming back to get that dough again.
You're positive Fatso Gildersleeve brought it back here, Al?
Oh, yeah, yeah. After we left the Grand at his house, you see, we tailed him over here.
And we looked through the window, and there he is, handing it over to the judge. Gee, it seemed like a lot of wasted effort.
Well, we worked that safe once, we can do it again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's getting to be a habit, Louie.
Yeah, watch your step, though. There's a copper sitting out in front in that prowl car. The judge must ask for police protection.
Yeah, he needs it. I can hear that copper snoring clean over here.
Yeah, okay. Let's get in there. Hey. Hey, what's that?
What?
Somebody coming out of that window.
Gee, look. It's him. The same guy.
Yeah. Fatso Gildersleeve.
Pretty smart plant, all right. He turns over the dough and then comes back here and lifts it. Only he ain't gonna get away with it.
Yeah, what are we gonna do?
Take him for a ride.
But we ain't got no car.
So we get a car. You handle Fatso. Leave the rest to me.
Hello. Hello. Hello, headquarters. This is Judge Hooker. Yeah, I had a bad dream a few minutes ago. Woke me up and I went into the den to get a book and... No, there was no police car out in front. If there was, I wouldn't be calling you. Who cares what happened to your old police car? Somebody robbed my safe again.
Just keep your hands on the wheel, Fatso. Remember, there's three of us sitting back of you.
Yeah, three of us. And a gun.
Where are you making me drive to, gents?
Oh, to a nice quiet spot in the country, pal.
Is this trip absolutely necessary?
You know, Al, I think we used the suicide routine on him.
Suicide?
Yeah. You don't look too well anyway.
Calling all cars. Calling all cars.
Oh, this must be a police car.
Now, ain't that interesting?
Be on the lookout for police car 61. Police car 61. Stolen from in front of Judge Hooker's home.
And we could tell him where it is, too, you know?
I hate that laugh.
Dude.
Say, that's right. We could. We really could.
Calling all cars. Calling all cars.
Hey, turn it off, Fatso. I heard enough.
Be on the lookout for police car 61.
Did you hear what I said?
Police car 61.
Hey, you.
Huh? Oh, turn it off. Yes, sir.
There's a switch on the dashboard.
Yes, sir. I see it. Got it right here.
Calling all cars.
Now, they don't talk to us, and we don't talk to them.
Yeah, of course not. Not at all. Me.
Oh, I am Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, driving police car 61.
Say, is that guy nuts?
Singing on the way to his funeral.
Singing on the way to my funeral. I am Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, and I'm being taken for a ride. I am Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, and soon I will be dead.
Amazing thing, Judge Hooker. That's why I sent for you. I'll tune in car 61 on the radio again. Now listen, Judge.
Singing on the way to my own funeral, singing on the way to my grave. You know, fellas, when the police find out that you robbed Judge Hooker's house two nights in a row, it's going to be pretty tough for you, Barton.
Louis Barton.
And how do you figure they'll find out, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Gildersleeve.
Oh, they'll find out, all right. Yes, sir.
I am Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve on the beautiful Oak Post Road.
The Oak Post Road. Come on, Judge, we gotta hurry.
I am Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve on the beautiful Oak Post Road, going far, far away.
He's giving me the creeps with that singing.
I'll let him enjoy himself while he can.
Thanks. And it won't be long now unless somebody helps me.
Yeah, with a voice like that, it won't be.
You know, Al, it's kind of funny him singing like that. I think I better take a look at that. Sure, he's got that microphone on.
Hey! Hey, they didn't even hear every word we said.
Stop the car, you! Stop the car!
All right, brother, I will!
Stop! Don't try that wheel, no!
Oh! And then all I did was spin the wheel, and when I woke up, I was here in the hospital.
Oh, Unky, you're wonderful.
You're terrific, Unc.
Well, it wasn't really anything at all. By the way, Horace, how are the three crooks?
They'll live to do a nice long stretch.
Great.
Uncle Mort, I'll bet you voted to let that guy go just so you could round up his pals.
Of course he did. I knew it all along.
Well.
How about it, Throckmorton? Was that it?
Well, everyone seems to be agreed. And you know me, Horace. I always go along with the majority.
Thank you, Harold Perry, and all the rest of you who have given us such a delightful half hour. Your appearance here tonight with the Lady Esther Screen Guild Players has contributed a great deal to the Motion Picture Relief Fund and its country house, both largely supported by this radio program. Heard tonight in support of the Great Gildersleeve were Walter Tetley as Leroy, Louise Erickson as Margie, Lillian Randolph as Birdie, Earl Ross as Judge Hooker, and Richard LeGrand as Mr. Peavy. Thanks again to all of you. And now, before we tell you about next week's show, here's a word from one of America's best-known beauty authorities, Lady Esther.
Do you know that women who think they take the best possible care of their skin often damage their skin most? Or they use too many different kinds of preparations? The really best care of the skin is the modern, simplified method of one cream, as exemplified by Lady Esther Four-Purpose Face Cream. It does the four things your skin needs most for beauty. First, Lady Esther Face Cream cleans your skin. Cleans it thoroughly, but gently. Second, it softens your skin. Absorbs the dry, clinging flakes that ruin the effect of makeup. Third, it helps nature refine the pores. Makes the texture of your skin look smoother and finer. And fourth, it leaves a perfect base on which powder clings longer and looks more glamorous. Yes, Lady Esther Face Cream, this one cream by itself, does all these four things. And a single application leaves your skin so smooth and fresh, so free of clinging dry flakes, that when you apply your face powder, the effect is truly beautiful. If you have the courage to look 10 years younger, if you have the courage to look daringly romantic, try this. First apply Lady Esther Face Cream. Wipe it off completely. Then apply Lady Esther Bridal Pink Face Powder. Bridal Pink, the shade that does so much for your appearance, that makes you look so much more radiant and alive. Ask for Lady Esther Four-Purpose Face Cream and Lady Esther Bridal Pink Face Powder.
Next week, the Lady Esther Screen Guild Players will present Laura. It will star Jean Tierney, Clifton Webb, David Bruce, and Dana Andrews. Be sure to listen. Harold Perry appeared through the courtesy of the Kraft Cheese Company, and his own show, The Great Gildersleeve, returns to the air September 2nd on another network. Gildersleeve's Bad Day was presented through the courtesy of RKO Radio Pictures. Music on tonight's program was arranged and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. You save enough on the largest size jar of Lady Esther Face Cream to buy a box of Lady Esther Face Powder. So remember, ask for the largest size. This is Ted Myers speaking for Lady Esther, saying thank you and good night. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
All right, that's the Lady Esther Screen Guild Theater, August 13th, 1945. Gildersleeve's Bad Day, starring Hal Perry.